Okay, Parsha Shoftim starts off with this. Shoftim, v'shoftim, titzin l'chav v'chol sh'arecha, sh'Hashem alokecha nosin l'chol yishvatecha, v'shoftu usam mishpat tzedek. You should have judges and officers, officers in all of your gates that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you among your shvatim, and they should judge the people mishpat tzedek, a good mishpat, some type of mishpat. Okay, so it's interesting. It says, lishvatecha. Rashi says the following. It says, I'm so proud. Malamed shemoshivin dayan l'chol shev v'shev v'chol yir, that you have to have Dayanin in every shevet and every city. So it's an interesting little line over here. What's the pshat in having a Beis Din by every shevet? So here we go. It works out like this. At the end of the Navi Shoftim, not Parsha Shoftim, at the end of the Navi Shoftim, there's a story that goes on there called Pilegesh Begiva. You might have heard of it with Pilegesh Begiva. Crazy things happen. Basically, and I'm giving a very big synopsis of that story, there's a guy who goes from the Shevet Yehuda towards somewhere else. He had a concubine. The concubine ran away. He went to go get his concubine back. As they leave the concubine's house, they go and they stop off in a place called Giva. They were delayed. They ended up staying in Giva overnight. Instead of going to a Goyish town, they went to Giva overnight. Giva was full of Binyaminites. There were a lot of Binyamin people there, and he was on his way down to Yehuda. He was a man from Levi. What ended up happening was they came to the house, and they did similar to what happened with Lot and the Malachim, that they came around the house. There are these Bnei Belial, these people that went around the house where this guy was staying, and they said, bring out the guy so we will know him, obviously to be able to do something bad to him. So what the guy said was the famous line, just like Lot. He called out and he said, please guys, don't do this, that's not the right thing. I'm going to send out my daughter and his concubine, and that should be the way to do it. So similar to what Lot did, obviously sounds like Rishus, sounds like absolute evil. So the people said, no, we only want to know him. The guy takes his concubine, throws her outside the door. They are together with her all night long. The next morning, she crawls back to the house. The guy realizes that she's dead, puts her up on his donkey, goes back to his town. Now listen to this. Cuts up her body into 12 pieces and sends it to the 12 Shvatim of Klal Yisrael. Reb Moshe Feinstein paskins from that, that lahalacha, if you want to make a hafkana, some type of protest, and you want to take the dead body and show it to people in order to be misorder everybody about that hafkana, to show people what happens when terrorists bomb something, if you want to bring out a dead body and use it that way, it's mutter from the fact that they did this by the body of the Pilegesh.
People sick? It's like a horror movie.
This guy, and it does sound pretty bad. The guy did go ahead and do this. He did that in order to show people
Binyamin.
They did to the Pilegesh. Oh, the people of Binyamin. So what the people did, what they said was, all the other people around there, all Bnei Yisrael, yelled out loud, and they said, let's go get him. So everybody came up as an army with 300,000 people. They came down against Binyamin, and they said, we are going to fight you. We want those guys. We want those guys right now. Binyamin said, no. We're not going to send you those guys. And eventually they started a war. They asked the Urim V'Tumim in the wrong way what to do. The Urim V'Tumim says, go up against them. Bnei Yisrael lost twice. So finally they asked the Urim V'Tumim, should we fight against Binyamin? And they were told, yes, you should fight against Binyamin. And then they went up and they won the war. They defeated all Binyamin and they decimated Binyamin. They destroyed every man, woman, and child from Binyamin except for 600 of them. One of those 600 people was Shaul. An unbelievable story that happens in the Navi with Pilegesh Begiva. But the question is so odd. What was Binyamin doing? These guys were Rishayim. There's no question they were Rishayim. They did a horrible thing. And even though they weren't necessarily Chayav Misa, there are ways of killing people, even though they're not Chayav Misa, in order to teach people a lesson. This is a time to teach people a lesson. Obviously, they're not getting the point over here. You got to stop doing whatever it is they were doing. You got to make sure that they understand that this is wrong. So why didn't they do that? So here's the pshat. It's brought down by the Radak and the Malbim. He said because everybody at that time knew there's a Beis Din in every shevet. Every shevet has their own Beis Din. The halacha was that if somebody's going to judge these people from Binyamin, it's got to be shevet Binyamin. Shevet Binyamin has their own Beis Din. They'll take care of it and they'll deal with it. And then afterward, if they can't judge it, then they'll send him to Sanhedrin. And then the whole judgment will happen. But for you guys to come up against us, Binyamin said, you have no tie on these guys. These guys are our people. If we decide they're Chayav Misa, then they're Chayav Misa. If we don't decide they're Chayav Misa, you have no shaykhs to them.
Binyamin didn't do anything after the story.
They waited to say, if Bnei Yisrael were going to fight them, they said, this is not your fight. You're fighting for the wrong reasons. So that's why they got up and they fought. So they said to themselves, we're doing the right thing over here. We're going to judge these people. We're not going to let them go free. But you guys have no right to these people, so stay out of it. That's what they told Bnei Yisrael. Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael held no, this is something that they wanted to teach a lesson for, and they were wrong in that aspect. Binyamin was right. However, Binyamin ended up losing because they started having gaiva. They started thinking that we're winning this war, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was only with us and not with Bnei Yisrael, and because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ended up letting Bnei Yisrael win in the end. So Binyamin got decimated, yeah.
So why did they lose the first fight then? Why didn't the Orbit Tomb let him win the first one?
They said they won the first one and the second one.
They were right.
They said that they lost the second one.
And Yama won the first and the second one. So therefore it was perfectly fine. So that's the pshat behind each shevet having their own Sanhedrin. Because they do have their own Sanhedrin. It's so much of a halacha, says the Ramban, that by Pilegesh Begiva, this is a halacha that Binyamin was willing to fight over. To say you guys are 100% wrong, we're willing to fight you over it. We're willing to wage a civil war over such an issue. Now there are a lot of things that go unanswered in that parsha. That's something else entirely. I just wanted to bring up that point itself. Yud Zayin Beis, and Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Beis says, Ki Matzi Bekir B'chol B'achad Sherecha Shem Elokecha Nosen L'cha Yisho Yisho Shere Yasa Zara B'nei Hashem Elokecha L'Avar Briso. If you find a man that does something wrong, it ends up saying that you bow down to Avodah Zarah. Now here's a strange line. It says, V'yilich V'yavad Olim Acherem V'yishtachu L'hem. You went and you served other idols, and you bow down to them. L'Hashemesh Ol Yarech, the sun and the moon, L'chol Tzva Shemaim, all the stars in the sky, Asher Lo Tzivisi, that I never commanded. What does that mean, Asher Lo Tzivisi? That I never commanded you to bow down to them? Of course he never commanded them to bow down to... I don't understand. What would be the Havamim if our Kaddish Baruch would even say that? Obviously, Asher Lo Tzivisi, he never commanded. Why would Hashem think that I ever commanded somebody to bow down, in which he said, no, these I never told you to bow down to? What was the Havamim in the beginning? And so far, this is one of the... It's such a hard line. It's one of the 70 changes of the Septuagint. In the Septuagint, when the 72 Zakenim went and changed around the Torah, and there were changes that were made in the Torah, so that when the Torah was translated into Greek, it would be translated in a good way. One of those changes was these words, Asher Lo Tzivisi, that I never commanded. Sounds like that I didn't command them, but they do have some type of power. That there's some type of power to these Avodah Zarah. They change it to Asher Lo Tzivisi La'avdam, that I never commanded you to serve them. That was a word that was added out of here, but that's not what it's saying. And plus, what does that mean that I never commanded them to serve them? So here it goes like this.
Why is that translation any better?
It doesn't sound any better, but it doesn't give them the power. If you say, I never commanded them to be, and yet they are in the world, sounds like, oh, they have their own power. But if you say, I never commanded to serve them, even though it sounds like it's superfluous and unnecessary, at least that's something that can't make you a kofer. It's something weird, though. But let's say it does mean that way. Still, that's a weird thing. What in the world does the Kaddish Baruch Hu mean by that? So here we go. If you guys ever heard of something called shituf? Shituf. No. Shituf is partnership.
Right, partnership.
To bow down to a Kaddish Baruch Hu and an idol at the same time. To believe that this Coke bottle over here is a manifestation of God in this world, and by bowing down to this Coke, I'm bowing down to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Now obviously that's awesome. But where do you see that that's also? Where do you know that Shituf is also? Now, the Egel is a good call, but the Egel Azov was a different idea entirely. When we get to Kisisa, we'll explain it a little bit further, but in a parenthesis, I'll just tell you that the Egel Azov was done with the correct reasons. It was done to be a manhig, for it to be a leader of Klal Yisrael, not to bow down. People took it too far and bowed down to it, which was the problem. But it was never supposed to be that way. That was not an idea of Shituf. Shituf is where I believe that there's something down here, and I bow down to this thing, thinking that it represents God in Shemayim. Now that obviously is usur, but where do you see that it's usur? Where does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, do not represent me with anything inside this world? It's so good that you have to take some now. Either way, so it said, what in the world is going on? How do we understand that? So he says, the Chassam Sofer says, that's what's going on over here. Notice, no person really worships Avodah Zarah on its own. On its own, people don't do. In other words, to really believe that that golden idol is the one that created me, nobody really believes that. Obviously, the golden idol was created by someone. It's not the thing that created me. Nobody would be such an idiot. Rather, the Spirit of God, which is God elsewhere, manifests itself inside this golden statue. That is Shituf. Real Avodah Zarah, where a guy literally bows down to the sun, thinking the sun is my God, and there's nothing else in the world but the sun, that's ridiculous. There's nobody that does that, says Chassam Sofer, except for Jews. Only Jews would be so obstinate and that stupid to bow down to the sun thinking the sun is a god. Or bow down to a brick thinking a brick is a god. Every other nation in the world wouldn't be that stupid. They would all do it b'shituf. They'll take a Coke bottle and say it represents God. They'll take a brick and they'll say it represents God. They'll take that six-armed elephant and they'll say, this is my representation of God inside this world. That's what they'll do. But to say that this is God, that's a little too far. No idiot is going to go that far unless they're Jewish. So it says the Chasam Sofer, that's the pshat later on in the pasuk. It says, where is it? I'm sorry. It says, Nesta Toeva Zos B'Yisrael. I have to find it. It says, this type of thing only happens by Jews. It never, here we go. It's in Pasuk Dalet. He says, V'yemetz Nachona Davor. You find out that it's true. Nesta Toeva Zos B'Yisrael. This abomination was done among the Jews. Only among the Jews would he have that abomination. But by Asher Lo Tzivisi, he's not going with the idea of Avodah Zarah by itself. He's going with the idea of Shituf, of a partnership, of what he's saying, I never commanded you to bow down to anything else. I did command you to bow down to me, but I never commanded you to bow down to anything else. And even though it's just Shituf, that's not enough. Thank you very much, guys. Those are very necessary. Okay, yeah, I appreciate that. Okay, here we go. Ready? Now we're back into the real shir. That was like my fake shir. Now we go into the real shir. Zion. Oh, man. This is a great line. Who kills the guy first? You have a guy who's over that Avodah Zarah, two Adam go up to him and say, you better not worship that Avodah Zarah, you're going to be killed. The guy says, Afal Pekin, I don't care, I'm going to do it anyway. He goes and says, Afal Pekin. He goes ahead and does it. Now he gets killed. Who kills him? You got to get Skila, right? So they throw the guy down and they throw the rocks on him and everything. Who does it?
The city. Right?
The city?
I could sit there.
The what?
The city.
The Om, no.
I know.
Throw them together.
I'm going to read that pasuk again. Yada Adim, Tia Bo Barishona. The hands of the Adim will be against him first. Lahamiso to kill him. Viadkoa on Bahrona. The people will be after that. The people will come after it. Viato Rami Kerbacha. Yes, the Adam get that first shot. They're the ones who throw down that huge rock. If he doesn't die then they take down more rocks. That's when all the people pelt him with stones. And that's where you have all the people. But the Adam do it first. Why the Adam? So here's the idea. Tuv Tam Vidas. The sefer Tuv Tam Vidas is a very nice answer. He says, the idea is like this. Rav Mendel Kaplan was a rabbi in Skokie Yeshiva. Then he went to Philadelphia, Philly. I just can't get off of Skokie Yeshiva. It's just I can't deal with it. Rav Mendel Kaplan was a rebbe there years and years and years ago. He was the rebbe of Rav Beryl Wein. He was the rebbe of Myrish Yeshiva, Rav Lairfield. He was the rebbe of a couple people that you know about. So Rav Mendel Kaplan was famous for the fact that he was a European Rav who just had a connection with certain people. So what happened with Rav Mendel Kaplan once is that he walked inside of one of the parents of one of his Bachram's house. He went inside their house and they had the TV on. On the TV, there was one of those, I guess you could call it boxing matches, but it was a boxing match basically. So one guy punched the other guy, and he saw like a little bit of blood come out from his mouth. Like a little bit of, you know, something coming out from his mouth. Mendel Kaplan immediately threw up all over the carpet. Now that's awkward. That's really awkward. They said to him, Rebbe, what's wrong? What's wrong? They sat him down on the couch. They sat him there, whatever it is. He said, how do you not throw up when you see blood being shed from a human being? How can you not feel that way? We become so insensitized that we can watch horror movies and not be affected by it at all. We can watch people's heads come off, their arms come off, we can see chainsaws, we can see everything that we could possibly think of. Things, disgusting things, that's true. A doctor himself has to, we can become insensitized to it. A doctor has to insensitize himself to it.
Use your imagination.
On your imagination. 100%. Remendo Kaplan wouldn't let his imagination run that wild. He wouldn't let it. He knew what it meant, but he couldn't picture it even. He couldn't picture it. He was so sensitive to such an issue, he wouldn't let that bother him. The idea is like this. If these guys saw this happen, they saw Chilul Shabbos, they saw Arias, especially Arias, they saw Avodah Zarah, they saw any of these things happen, they become insensitized to it. When you see people being the Chilul Shabbos, you don't even notice it anymore. You just say like, alright, Nunu. Okay, what can you do? What can you be? You should scream. And I realize that's not the reason why people throw rocks at cars on Shabbos. And Shabbos, they're doing it for their own reasons. But the real shot, the real people that used to do it for the right reason, I'm sure there was one person who did it for the right reason. That one person who did it for the right reason is because you look at it and you're like, how could you break Shabbos? You become so... You're so sensitive to the issue that you're like, how could this happen? That's what should have happened. What should have been is that Yada Edom Tiyabo Barishona. It's that the Edom saw him do this. What should have been is that they got so angry, you're going to worship Avodah Zarah. You're going to worship an idol. What they should have done is they should have immediately smacked him. They should have killed him immediately. They should have hit him right there. But they couldn't. Why couldn't they? Because they just weren't sensitized to it. So that's why the Pasuk says as a chiyuv, kill them first. You guys have to be the guys that kill this guy. Why? Because you got to realize you can't be insensitive to this issue. There's only one problem that I have with this vort. Once they kill the guy, you're going to be insensitive to murder. You're going to be insensitized to murder. If the whole shot is that we want to make the guy insensitive, he wants to realize there's something wrong.
You've seen something that horrible, it'll always be like a permanent in your mind.
Yeah, but you don't want to have to kill him. Killing him is giving you the opposite effect.
You don't need to see any blood. You toss the guy off a cliff, and then you squish him with a rock.
You just don't see him. You squish him with a rock. Yeah, that's a good thought.
I mean, you don't even see
him. So they don't look. They don't look.
You toss the big guy off.
Okay.
Down or something.
Case where that happens, and they talk about it, I think, when they're conquering Eretz Yisrael. And because the Jews were killing for a mitzvah, it doesn't have that negative effect. I heard that. You ever heard that? I think you said it.
I heard it just now.
Yeah, I just heard it now also. That's true. We both heard it just now. I don't remember that offhand. But by the way, regardless, so maybe there's a difference by a mitzvah and everything, but Rav Wolfson, okay, but comes around and he explains something so different. See, this story I knew a long time ago. This story is an awesome story. I don't think he quotes this story, but he says from the Baal Shem Tov, anything that happens in your life is not a coincidence. If you see something bad happen, you know it was because of something that had to happen to you. There's something that, or not that happened to you, there's something that you were thinking of. Kadosh Baruch Hu realizes you were thinking about doing Avodah Zarah, so he shows you something that has to do with Avodah Zarah. The reason why you saw somebody murder another person is because you had thoughts of murder in your mind. You wouldn't see something tameh unless you had a little bit of tumah inside you that wanted you to see that thing. I'll give you a quick example. The quick example is, a girl is walking down the street, happens to be undressed, and a very good looking girl. You happen to turn the corner, you see a glimpse of that person, but you don't see the person itself, and you have nothing that actually hits inside your head. She turned the corner before then. You could have stepped there a second earlier, and you would have seen that girl. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that you didn't want to see that girl, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't let you see that girl. But if you did want to see it, deep down inside you're thinking, maybe there's a girl on the other side of the street, then when you turn the corner, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow there to be that girl. He won't make it happen that you miss that girl. The idea is there is something inside you that makes you see what you saw. If there's a billboard out there and you didn't realize it was there, you know, like, oh, I didn't know that was there. It's because you were thinking inside, there was a thought inside, says the Baal Shem Tov, that really you did want to see that sign. If a pop-up comes up on your screen on the computer and happens to be a bad pop-up, it's because deep down inside, you wanted that pop-up to come up. You wanted it to come up. Yeah.
My rabbi would get popped in his hole because his eyes are on it.
Listen, I am bringing down a Baal Shem Tov that's general, and I hear the kasha, Kivan, it's a good kasha, but the kasha is a specific instance by a tzaddik. That's not a kasha on the maisa. It's not a kasha on the drush, on the line itself.
Well, the entire recital, so somebody could have a little bit of that he wants, a little bit he doesn't want, or why?
I am not saying anything, but the Baal Shem Tov is saying yes. Baal Shem Tov is saying yes. 100%. There must have been something in Rav Mendel Kaplan that wanted him to see something like that, that wanted him. He was insensitive enough to be able to be affected by it, affected outwardly by it, physically by it. But the fact is, there was something wrong about it. It's a crazy, crazy little line, says the Baal Shem Tov. That tells you are lacking, you ate him, that saw this act happen. You saw something wrong happen, you saw a murder, you saw a Fadazar, you saw a riot. You're lacking in that issue. You got to be the first one to destroy that. And that's the pshat. Listen to this line. What's the end of it? Yada Adim Tiyabo Barishona, Viad Kolom Bachrona. Here we go. Uviarta Ra Mikir Becha. And you'll destroy the evil from within you. Because it's within you. The evil is inside you. It's Mikir Becha that's the problem. That's where it's going to be destroyed. And that's the idea behind it, why we're saying Viarta Ra Mikir Becha. It's a great line. It is a tremendous line, but a tremendous little word over here. All right, here we go. By the Misha Berach on Shabbos. You might have noticed, we say the words refuas anefesh or refuas aguf. What is refuas anefesh? What does it mean, healing of the soul? And so too, my uncle came up to me once, and he said to me, you know, like, I've got a lot of shilohs and emunah. I've got a lot of problems with emunah. What do I do? So is there any, like, tefillah that I could say during davening that will be able to help for that? So I said, yeah, refa'inu. Refa'inu. Because there's refuas anefesh within refa'inu. You're still going into the idea of the nefesh. What does that mean, healing the nefesh? The pshat behind the nefesh is the following. If you have doubts in your mind, whether it has to do with Torah thoughts, that I don't understand how this works. I don't understand this case. I don't understand this halacha. I don't understand this or that or whatever, this board. I just don't understand what's going on here. Or you have a kasha and a muna, that I don't believe this is so. I can't believe that a Kadosh Baruch Hu will be that way. And you just can't believe it. That doubt in a muna is a chole hanefesh. It's a sickness of the soul. It's a sickness in your soul. Now, you can't realize that. It's not a physical thing. It's not like a sickness where I feel like I'm sick and I got a head cold or I got a stomach ache or I got something like that. It's nothing like that. It's a holy thing you can't feel, but you know it's there because you have doubts. There's a doubt inside your head. The only way to get rid of that is by having some type of refuah sanefesh. Refuah sanefesh is... Rufainu? Rufainu includes Rufus and Ephesh. I didn't say it said Rufus and Ephesh, I said it includes Rufus and Ephesh. That the idea behind it is still Rufus and Ephesh. The Pshat is, my friends, my Pshat is so poshut. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said this in Parshas Mishpatim. Kol ha-machala asher samti b'mitzrayim, all the sicknesses that I put in Mitzrayim, lo asim alecha, ki ani Hashem rofecha. I won't let them be upon you, because I am Hashem your rofe. Now, Pashup Shat, that refers to sicknesses. Any bad thing that they had in Mitzrayim, any one of the makos or anything like that they had in Mitzrayim, I'm not going to let that happen to you now. You won't be affected by now. I'm promising you, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm promising you that won't affect you. But there's another Pashup behind it as well. The other Pashup behind it is the nefesh part. He's trying to say that any makhla the Adam Mitzrayim, the doubts that you had in Mitzrayim, the problems that you had in Mitzrayim, the things that you said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, I don't understand why this works. I don't understand how you work. I don't understand why this is so or why that's so. All those things, Ani Hashem Rofecha. I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu and I will heal you. I'm the one who's going to be able to take it down. What you have to do is daven. You have to daven. You have to actually ask for it, says the Chassam Sofer. And that's what we're saying over here. Listen to these lines. If you have a wonder, if you have a kasha about some type of judgment, and then there's fights between you and you just can't get it. You don't understand it. You got to get up and go to where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to go. Ask the rabbis. I don't mean this in rabbis as in just Rabbi Sally or anybody like that. I mean, ask the people that you trust the most. The people you can go up to and say, I've got this problem in Emunah. What do you think about this problem? That's what they're there for. They're the ones who are supposed to be able to be the doctors for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help you as well, and you definitely have to daven, but these people themselves are there for that reason itself. They're in there in order to help you, and that's the rofe. By the king, it says, Lo yarba lo susim, he can't have too many horses. A very, very strange halacha. Rak lo yarba lo susim, and pasuk tez zayin. He's not allowed to have too many horses. Can't have too many horses, can't have too many women, can't have too many wives, I should say, and he can't have too much silver and gold. The reason why silver and gold is because of gaiva. The reason why woman is, again, because of taiva, basically. I understand both of those, but because of... I'm sorry?
He had a whole lot, didn't he?
Okay, but either way, but the third thing, it doesn't tell you not to have it. It's saying a king should not try to be marbelo because of his oath. He shouldn't have, you know, shouldn't try to add on more and more and more and more to taxing the people and making everything. And the last thing is horses. Why? So you don't go down to Mithraim. Shlomo had a lot of horses. Shlomo had about 1,000 wives. And Shlomo Melech had quite a bit of money to the point where Kesef wasn't worth anything at his time. What in the world is going on? I'm going to concentrate more on Susim than anything else. Why Susim? Why couldn't it be anything else? Horses? What do we do with horses? I think the pshat is like this. I heard this from Rav Shachter before. It's from Rav Shur. The pshat is that Sus... It's known as horsepower, right? That's what the car has. Car is horsepower. It's horsepower, right? It's known as horsepower. It's a crazy thing. We say two times in our davening, two things about a horse. Two things about a horse. Lo bigvuras hasus yachbats. Not in the strength of the horse does God desire. And in Lamatzeh, Eila Varechev, the Eila Basusim. They have chariots and they have horses. Ba'anachnu, B'shem Hashem Elokeinu Nazkir. We call them the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now listen to how this goes. This is a crazy line. The Egyptian mentality is to think that we can't save ourselves. We gotta have the weaponry. We got to have the horses. We got to get up on horses and fight with horses and chariots and weapons and everything that we have. The more weapons we have, the more successful we'll be. Because the sus was a sign of power. Note, there was not a single war throughout Tanakh that mentions that the Jews were riding horses. Now, one time does it mention a horse in an army of the Jew. The only time it mentions that they had a lot of horses is by Shlomo Melech. What do you know about Shlomo Melech?
No, but it always mentions the other
people. Wait, but what do you know about Shlomo? The other people have the horses and the chariots and everything. What do you know about Shlomo Melech? Never fought a war. This is the strangest thing in the world. Strangest thing in the world. Shlomo Melech went and got horses at a time when there wasn't any war. But the whole pshat behind why you can't have any horses, the whole pshat behind horses is to be able to fight in wars. To be able to have them for wars. So what in the world is going on here? What's with this? In fact, by the way, that's the pshat nazasha, what you were saying, that sus v'rochvo ramavayom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu threw down to the sea the horse and its rider and everything. So you see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to knock those down. People start to forget HaKadosh Baruch Hu when they have horses. When there's horses, they say to themselves, it's not God. It's the horses that are winning all these things. But there's something behind a horse that's also really good. And Shlomo Melech got the thing that's good. David slept. What type of sleep did he have according to the Gemara and Brachos and Dalet? Anybody remember? Yoshan Shinas Snus. It's Sus. I'm sorry, Snus. Either way, David Yoshan Shinas Sus. He slept the sleep of a horse. Now horses don't really sleep. They stand up the whole time and they rest a little bit, but then they wake up 60 seconds later. Go to sleep a little bit more and then they wake up immediately. David's sleep was like that. He was learning the whole time. And he fell asleep on his sefer. On his sefer. And when the harp came and blew and the wind and all the harp can, the beauty, beautiful songs and everything, that's when David Melech woke himself up fully and wouldn't let himself sleep anymore. But even when he slept, he still slept like a shina sus. I don't understand, is that a good thing? But a sus is a bad thing. A sus shows power. A sus shows type of... Listen to this. A sus and David have a lot to do with one another. A sus, a horse, has a lot of reliance on a Kadosh Baruch Hu. He believes that everything, a sus relies on what a Kadosh Baruch Hu gives him, and not only that, but his master. He sits there, and he's very loyal. Not like a dog that's a stupid loyalty. Not a dog that's stupid loyalty, where it totally forgets about a Kadosh Baruch Hu and just listens to one master and that's it. A sus retains its dignity while giving itself over to its master. It lets the master ride on top of him, but it never like loses its shine, loses its beauty. The sus retains its beauty, as opposed to a dog that just sits there as soon as his master comes in, on the ground, groveling, licking his feet. A sus would never do that. A sus has too much pride to be able to do that. He's so mech on the master to get him his food, and so mech on a Kadosh Baruch Hu as well. The name sus is, what's the letters? Samech v'samech. It's somech v'somech on a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It relies on a Kadosh Baruch Hu and goes further and further. Yeah.
Have you ever gotten riding on a horse?
Quite a bit.
They're disgusting, animals.
Why are they disgusting? Because they go to the bathroom?
While they're walking, just like...
But any animal's like that.
Like,
they have a dignity in how they look.
At least not like a dog.
I hear you.
But they have a dignity in how they look. That's because you've never really driven a... You've never really ridden a horse. You know, when you really ride a horse, you know what you're doing. The Seuss listens to you.
I did.
Obviously not.
Yeah,
the horse was riding you, wasn't
it? Feel
you were on the ground. The horse was on top of you. What's on top of you? No, I understand. I understand. Wow. I know that. What do you mean? I learned how to horseback ride. I've done the lessons and everything. My wife had all that equipment. She had a horse. She had a little pony. She did all that. She knew like how to trot and how to, you know, like how to do all the different things, gallops and everything. She's unbelievable.
Right.
That's a sus. A sus is so much for so much, but there's a difference. David HaMelech. What's David HaMelech? Dalid, the Dalid, Dolas, is getting poorer and poorer. Davon was all about, he was poorer and poorer. He went and took himself down. But when it came to a sus, he was somech v'somech on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Davon HaMelech knew that, therefore at sleep, he would be somech v'somech on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He took that sus and he used it for himself. Because Shlomo Melech didn't use it for wars. Because in wars, it's a bad thing to have. You can't have that in wars. That's an evil thing to have. To have that in wars is going to be a problem. But to have it during this time, to have it while you're sitting there and you have a, what's it called? When you have a peace time, you can have a sus because it teaches you how to be somech on a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It taught all the people about it, and thus he was able to be marba susan, even though he was told lo yarba lo susan.
David, the king of Israel, never rode a horse.
No, he wore a chamor. No, he rode a chamor. That's what it says. And some say a parrot, a mule. But it's always written as, what is Mashiach going to ride when he comes into town? He's riding a donkey. He won't ride a horse for that reason, that it's too much. A sus is not like that. Okay, very quickly, how does magic work? Does the Kadosh Baruch Hu want it or not? What does the Kadosh Baruch Hu want? See, here's how it goes. When the Kadosh Baruch Hu made the Tachtonim, made our entire world, he made Elyonim, the skies, with the ability to rule over everything and give power to anything that we have down in this world. So meaning, anything that we want in this world, if we want it to work, the sun, the moon, the stars, the constellations are all in charge of it. There's a koach behind it. Each one of them has a malach that's in charge of it. That malach is given a certain job. That malach puts that koach into the moon, the sun, the stars, and whatever. whatever it is, and that stuff rains down on top of the world, and thus everything moves. Says the Ramban, necromancers and astrologers know that if the moon is in a certain spot at a certain time during the night, at a certain mazel, at a certain constellation, if you make a certain model and you put on the model the name of the mazel and the name of the malach that's in charge of the moon when the moon is in that position, and the picture is exactly like that picture, you can cause things to be destroyed. People used to put it, the Rabbeinu Bachai says, people used to put this underneath storefronts of other people, and their stores would go out of business. On the other hand, you could do it the opposite way as well. You could do a different type of a picture in a different type of time and do this and that and whatever and put it all together, and then write all those things, and you put it underneath a person's business, and all of a sudden that person will be extremely successful in business. There are different ways to use the kochos of the suns and the stars for our own purposes by making the malachim bring certain kochos down. That's how magic works. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want it. Kishuv is mechashe. It's machish. Pamal Yishamayla. It knocks down the plans that God has. But what Kishuv does is brings down kochos from the other world, from the spiritual world of the malachim, and brings it down into this earth to be able to work. Some people say that it doesn't exist. The Rambam says, and the Meiri seems to say, that it doesn't exist. That there is no such thing as magic. There never was such a thing as magic. It's all achiza seinayim. It's all just sleight of hand. Now, however, the Ramban says it clearly exists. Chazal talked about it. Chazal talked about it, and Chazal say it happened. It had to have existed. But the Rambam still works lahalacha, to which we paskin lahalacha, that achiza seinayim is also. You are not allowed to do sleight of hand. Not allowed to do sleight of hand. Because the Rambam says that there's no magic nowadays. And because the Rambam says no magic, all these magics that are ostered in the Torah that we talk about on Parsha Shoftim, Menachesh, Mechashev, and Chover Chaver, and Ov, and Yidoni, and everything, all of them are fakes. So you can't even fake magic. It's an Isser Deal Raisa, says the Rambam, to fake magic. So therefore, any magician out there would be Usser Medio Raisa to do what they're doing. If you hold there's no such thing as magic, that means you hold it's also to go to a magic show. Even so, is also, that's what the Torah is asering. The Torah is not giving you that heter. Torah is saying it's aser. So achiza seinayim should be aser completely. Says Reb Moshe Feinstein. A famous Shuvah in Or Chaim. Says Reb Moshe Feinstein, wait a second. It's in Yoredei, I'm sorry, in Kufayin Tes. This is in the Kufayin Tes. Says Reb Moshe Feinstein, wait a second. You got something wrong here. Sleight of hand should not be aser. If a guy is really quick with his hands, puts a coin in his hand, it goes like, what hand is it in? And he's able to fool you. He's really quick with his hands. It's just a God-given gift. If a guy runs very fast, like Naftali, he says, was able to speed run through somewhere, is that achiza seinayim? Because people don't think that's natural. Yehuda was so strong, he's able to knock down mountains, knock down things. Was his strength, or Shimshon HaGibor, when he knocked down things and took up a big thing, was that achiza seinayim and therefore usher? Out of logically speaking, that's not achiza seinayim. So if you have a gift to do things very quickly, it shouldn't be usher. All these things should be mutter. Anything which you do, sleight of hand, that's quick-handed, something like that, then it should be perfectly fine. And as long as the guy knows that it's not magic, as you said, that he knows and he tells him afterward, this is how it goes, as it is, or whatever, then it should be perfectly mutter. But this is the part of Ramosha that nobody reads. The end of Ramosha says, at the end of the tshuva, he says, however, since the Shach says it's usher, who am I to argue on the Shach? I can't argue on it. It's not a dochek. He's saying misvara. It doesn't make any sense to me why achiza seinayim should be usher.
But I can't. But you still should.
He's calling it a talent. A talent. He's calling it a talent. Yeah, 100%. He's saying it seems to be somewhat of a talent. So says the achrayim. I'm not going to quote you down different rabbanim and what they say about magic and everything like that. Obviously, each person has to go to their own Rav and be able to ask him, what do you do about magic and everything like that? You know, you have to say, can you do it, can you not do it, and everything like that. But, however, I will tell you that it's not so easy to hire a magician. Not so easy to hire a magician, especially if he doesn't tell you what to do. I realize, you know what I'm thinking of, right? Over this past year? All right, that one big magic show where they made for thousands of people. I mean, there was a big magic show for everybody. Listen, it's not so easy. There are heterim. But the heter that's given by Rav Moshe is very clearly not a heter. He very clearly does not give it as a heter to people. He was asked, what would I tell people if people ask me? And he seems to say that I would get around the shaila. He seems to say I would get around the shaila. I wouldn't want to paskin it. It's a very, very strange Rav Moshe. Very, very strange Rav Moshe, but regardless.
It's easier to say the magic then is different than the magic now.
The magic then is a bit different. This is all according to the Rambam, though. If you say the magic exists, is there. One of my favorites out of the magics is the Yadoah. We're going to have to end with this, but the Yadoah, the Yadoni, Ovi Yadoni. We got to go into the Yadoah. I can't get rid of the Yadoah. What is the Yadoah? See, Yadoni was, you had a bone from an animal called the Yadoah, in which you would put it underneath your tongue. You would place that bone underneath your tongue. And then you would be able to speak the future, and you'd be able to speak to the dead. You'd be able to speak to the dead and speak to the future. Ah, so what is the Yadoah? So the Rambam says, and Midrash Koelis brings it down, it's a pet. And the Rambam says it is a type of creature that can speak unintelligible words, but it can serve you at the table, and it can bring you things, but it is an animal. And the Kfaris Yisrael translates it as an orangutan. An orangutan. So it's going to be an orangutan. I don't want to know what you just said.
I just said I want one.
Oh, you want one. So that's fine. It's an orangutan. They use these in Africa all over the place. Orangutans serve at tables. They have them all over the place. They dress them up. They have them. Orangutans are extremely smart. They have them. They're serious. They have them. They're very, very smart. I knew I was going somewhere with this. So he goes down. Said the volume, you got to put the bone of the Yadoah inside your mouth itself. That's the idea. So you take the bone of an orangutan, put it inside your mouth, that's that. However, the Rabbeinu Bechaya calls it an Adnei Asodeh. The Adnei Asodeh is mentioned in Mishnah's Kilayim, Parachas Mishnahei. In Parachas Mishnahei and Kilayim, the Rav, Reb Avadya Mibartanura, and the Rash both say that it's this crazy creature that looks like a human being. It has the head, the arms, the legs, and basically the body of a human being, just one big difference. It's got a stomach tube that's attached to its stomach, that's attached to a gourd in the ground. And it gets its food out of the ground. And it's not really an animal, it's a plant animal, so to speak, in which it gets all its sustenance from the ground. It's very strong ass item, then why does it have a mouth? What does it need a mouth for if it gets all its sustenance from the ground? To which they answer, to be able to kill people. Because it's supposed to be extremely dangerous. And anybody that goes near it gets torn up by its claws and its teeth. So it doesn't have the ability to swallow from its mouth, but it has the teeth in order to bite things down.
That's a
strange thing. Where do we find an animal like that? But regardless. Maisa Tovia. Reb Tuvia Roife. Tuvia Roife went around trying to be ma'ames all the different midrashim, trying to tell you that all these midrashim were true. Tuvia Roife went to a place called Territoria Hagidola. It is somewhere in mid-Africa. He went to a place called Sambalula. Sambalula was someplace there, and they found that there were these creatures there that were going from the ground. Says my Satuvia, they looked like wool sheep without wool. Sheep without wool. And he said they taste like fish. He said he didn't taste it himself, but they say it tastes like fish, and the blood tastes like honey, and it does grow from the ground, and there are still seeds around for those who want to see it. That's what Maisa Tovia says. This is in the 1600s. Maisa Tovia wrote that down. And it said it's there. But it says that it's like a human being. It says, Tovia Rofe, it's possible that Chazal, because the sheep, I guess without the skin, looks somewhat like a human being on four, so maybe that's what it's like. But it is supposed to be dangerous, and the only thing that can kill it is by shooting an arrow at its belly button, the thing that connects it to the gourd, and that's what Avi meant before, by Esav killed it. That's a shot on the Adoni bone. If you take that bone and you put it underneath your mouth, you'll be able to speak the future and everything. Thus, Esav was able to speak the future. So therefore, Yitzchak thought that he had Ruach HaKodesh, because he didn't realize that he was able to kill the Yadoah. And that's why Yitzchak thought that he was such a gavah. All right, guys, we're going to stop with that. Have a good Shabbos.